Welcome into Diamonds in the Desert. I'm Haley Stasiak here with Jordan Hamm. We're talking Diamondbacks baseball and the recent somewhat, I guess you could call it a dog days of summer skid that the Diamondbacks have had in recent weeks.
Yeah, it's been a rough go of it. The trip up to Minnesota where they got swept, just that was probably the worst showing of baseball I've seen from them this year. They really struggled in kind of in all facets, but nothing really rejuvenates you quite like the New York Mets.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a second. They're in the midst of that series with the Mets. They've already taken two, have two more on Wednesday evening and Thursday morning, mountain time here in Arizona for all of us here. But let's begin first by talking about kind of a little bit more in depth about that Minnesota series and about that split with the Astros. We'll start with that split with the Astros. Patrick Corbin highlighted that by far. He went 8 2/3 scoreless innings, allowed only 4 hits with 7 strikeouts, and manager Torey Lovello pulled him after he gave up a 2-out double to Astros first baseman Yuli Gurriel, in the 9th inning there. And, I mean, at the time, he had gone, I think it was like 16 2/3 scoreless innings. This past, what was it, yesterday? Today's Wednesday, as we're recording this. It was Tuesday. He had extended that scoreless hit streak, or that scoreless inning streak, to 20 1/3 before he gave up a home run to the Mets. So just like a great showing from Patrick Corbin to close out that Astros series and get that split.
Yeah, he's been, it's been interesting because I think the, it's been no secret he's been the most inconsistent pitcher in the Diamondbacks rotation.
Right, and we've talked about that.
And we've talked about it quite a bit. And even if there was an addition, like, he might be the odd man out, but he has really locked it down. And it's actually, to go completely inside baseball, a little behind the scenes, I was actually pursuing a story about Patrick Corbin at home versus Patrick Corbin on the road. Going into this road stand, he had a 2.87 ERA at home, a 7-3 record. Away, his ERA was approaching about 7, and then a 3-8 record. So it was really struggling on the road. He's now dropped that by about an entire run in terms of away ERA. And he has, to be fair, he's faced the Dodgers on the road and the Cubs on the road. He's had some tough guys on the road to face, but he's been completely lights out. And they've needed someone to compliment Zach Greinke while Robbie Ray's been out. Zach Godley's done a pretty good job. Taijuan Walker has had his moments. But when they needed him most, Patrick Corbin's the one that stepped up.
Now moving on to that Minnesota series. We'll get to, I want to get to Sunday's game before we talk anything else about that series. TJ McFarland started, got that rotation spot after they optioned Anthony Banda after the Astros series. Only lasted a third of an inning where he gave up 7 runs on 5 hits and had 2 walks and just an all-around not great inning for the Diamondbacks. And then Braden Shipley came in and had 5 2/3 innings. Again, though, gave up 5 runs, 4 of those earned on 7 hits. And it was just, they were tossed around like no other. And Friday night, they had the 10-3 loss. This Sunday's loss was 12-5. I mean, when we've talked in recent weeks, it was, oh, they've got a really tough stretch with being at Wrigley, and then the Dodgers come to town, and the Cubs are coming into town, and then they've got the Astros, 2 at Chase Field, 2 in Houston, and you were the one to say, hey, like, don't overlook this series with Minnesota.
Cubs aren't, or I'm sorry, the Twins aren't slouches. They, it's a perfectly Twins team that the guys on the roster and the stats won't jump out at you, but they can pour it on if they need to, and they did exactly that in what a lot of people were calling just like the quote-unquote bullpen game on that Sunday game, where it was McFarland, and I think that kind of the strategy was like, hey, let's have quite a few guys go 2-3 innings, just try to piece together, you know, those couple of runs. Things went bad from the get-go, and I don't know if it was because McFarland got moved up. He's been relatively solid all year.
Yeah, definitely out of the bullpen.
Has been good. Maybe just taking that start, the adrenaline got to him, or you know, that sort of thing. But just a rough go of it for him, and yeah, it looked pretty bleak. But then you get to New York, and pretty instantaneously, it's a shot of life.
Right.
You know, great starts by both pitchers. The offense is starting to come together. JD Martinez continues to have a really good stretch power-wise. And, you know, you mentioned off-air, Paul Goldschmidt was struggling in that Minnesota series, and he really turned it around as well.
Yeah, he had one of his longest skids of the year, going three games without a hit coming into Tuesday. But on the topic of that Minnesota series, too, I know also off-air we discussed earlier this week Greinke's start on Saturday and how it wasn't his best. But as a Diamondbacks fan, is there any concern that you think there should be around Greinke and that off day that he had?
I mean, he's kind of had a string of bad ones, but spliced together with, you know, you could argue that the best start of his season was against the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
So hasn't been maybe as lights out, but I think that's a lot of pressure on him with no Robbie Ray. And Taijuan Walker is looking more human now. Zach Godley hasn't been as good. Up until two starts ago, Pat Corbin was, you know, roll some dice and figure out what he's going to do. So I think there was definitely some pressure on him to, you know, go out and throw those perfect games. And the offense hasn't really been there either. So he's not throwing to make outs. He's throwing to make sure zero runs come across. So I think there might have been some added pressure to that. I'm going to give it – we talked that this rough stretch against really good teams was going to kind of define the season, and it was going to you know, it obviously was going to be very difficult. So I think that's more of a factor than his actual performance. I'm going to stay kind of on the optimistic side. I think when you get a couple of those, you know, San Diego Padres mixed in there, or some of the bottom feeders, like, things will kind of even out.
And I agree with you that with that, on staying on the optimistic kind of side of it. I mean, you do look at that Dodgers and that Cubs series, and they had their – it was not a good run for them, those two series. But there were slivers of hope in there where they avoided the sweep in both cases. So I do think that you do have to stay on the optimistic side with that. Just a little tidbit. You mentioned JD Martinez and the offense kind of waking up in this Mets series. JD Martinez is now one of 16 active players to homer against all 30 teams. Other notable guys that have done that are active include former Diamondback Mark Reynolds, Curtis Granderson, who is now a Dodger, Miguel Cabrera, and lots of big names that have also done that. So that's your little tidbit of information from this Mets series. Let's now get into some of the injury stuff that has happened in the last 2-3 days. Yasmani Tomas had core surgery on Tuesday, trying to fix some stuff with that right groin, hoping to get back on track with that. He had setbacks in his rehab. We talked about that last week. Ruby De La Rosa underwent his Tommy John surgery on Tuesday as well. Both, I heard, went well, and they should be on the road to rehab very soon. And then Jeff Mathis, who I was watching the game on Fox Sports Arizona last night, and they were discussing that part of it was Mathis keeping that right hand in front of him when he's catching. He had an avulsion fracture in his right hand, which means the ligament came off the bone and took fragments of the bone with it. And so he is now
out. Sounds pleasant.
Yeah. Obviously not. I mean, we've talked about how the catchers are kind of they've been solid in all aspects, and losing Mathis is kind of a blow to their little rotation that they've had for those three guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they've done a very good job managing not only the rotation but the bullpen as well. There's been vast improvement from last year, and I think a piece of that credit goes to Chris Iannetta and to Jeff Mathis. So to have him out, that's going to ask more of these catchers, both Herm the Worm, as he likes to call himself, and Chris Iannetta. So that's going to be some added stress to the rotation, and you know that, you know, it's the proof is in the pudding right now. There, how many guys have we talked about injury-wise in the last couple of minutes? It's getting towards the end of the season. Guys are starting to break down a little bit. You know, they're doing everything they can. It's not to stay fresh. It's just to stay upright, essentially. So a guy like Mathis, who does have a pretty good track record of being pretty durable, that definitely hurts. And I think he is a very much a calming presence in the clubhouse and with those pitchers, specifically the young ones.
on the topic of those pitchers, Robbie Ray is going to be back after being on the concussion DL for a time. He will close out the series against the Mets on Thursday. This could be a huge boost potentially to get them kind of back in the right direction.
Absolutely. You know, he's an all-star caliber pitcher. He's that high strikeout guy that you definitely want, and the 1A to Greinke's 1B, or vice versa. I probably messed that up. But, you know, the best teams in D-backs history have had those two really good pitchers, whether it was Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson or Brandon Webb and Dan Heron. The tandems work really well, and I think that's going to take a lot of pressure off some of these guys. You know, it won't require having Braden Shipley get called up and, you know, those guys for the spot starts, and it doesn't make the bullpen a little bit thinner when they decide to put TJ McFarland in there. So hopefully there are no residuals for him health-wise with this, and I'm sure he's been working through some of the mental stuff when he takes the mound, and that's what these starts are for, and that's why Lovello wasn't going to rush him back for multiple reasons. And you know, it's huge to, like, getting Kershaw back for the Dodgers, you know, obviously, right, to a lesser degree, because Clayton Kershaw is one of the I'll just say it, the best pitcher in baseball. But it's like getting that late season addition. It's like the GM went out and made a trade for a really good pitcher for your team. You're getting that guy back in your rotation.
They got a homestand coming up this weekend. The Giants are in town, and then the Dodgers are back. Now, the Dodgers may be without Cody Bellinger, who has a sprained right ankle, and Alex Wood, who has been a very important piece in their rotation. If the Diamondbacks are going to find a time to right the ship and really take advantage of the position that they've been in with the Mets, and granted, also want to reference, Monday's game with the Mets was not clean. Tuesday's game, I mean, they had a 7-0 lead and come out in the ninth inning, and not great. But if they are to right the ship and capitalize it, this is the best time to do so.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the injuries with the Dodgers, you know, the Cody Bellingers and Alex Wood not being in. This is the time when the Dodgers are okay not being bulletproof. And so you have to take advantage. They're playing the Brewers right now, who are on the Diamondback and the Rockies' butts right now, the Brewers. So they have three-game sets against both of those guys, and then the Diamondbacks will see the Dodgers again in early September, along with the Dodgers going to the Rockies. So that could be, while the Dodgers might take their foot off the gas a little bit, let guys get their minds right, get their bodies right for the playoffs, you can take advantage, get some wins, get some cushion in that wild card.
And speaking of the wild card, last night I had the Rockies game up on my MLB TV and the Diamondbacks game on my TV on Fox Sports Arizona. The Rockies have been struggling, fair enough to say, alongside the Diamondbacks. Going into Tuesday's game, they were half game up in the wild card. Then they lost against the Royals, and the Diamondbacks beat the Mets, so the Diamondbacks are now a half game up in that wild card as of Wednesday at 2 o'clock-ish. So if the Rockies kind of, obviously we're not rooting for or against any of this, but if the Rockies continue on this and the Diamondbacks find a way to capitalize on this Mets series, then they may be able to pull ahead. As you said, the Dodgers are headed to Coors Field coming up, and if the Dodgers can capitalize some more and get those guys back that have kind of been out for injury, that's huge too.
You brought up a really good point off air a couple days ago to me when we were talking about the Diamondbacks skid, and there are certain people in Arizona that are saying the sky is falling when it comes to the Diamondbacks. Some people actually probably in this company that were saying that. You brought up a good point that it was the Diamondbacks haven't been very good in the past 2 weeks, and part of it's who they're playing, but also the Rockies have been bad. They haven't run away with it. Currently, the Diamondbacks are still the lead team in the division, or in the wild card, excuse me. You have Milwaukee breathing down your neck. You still have another 5 games before you get to the Cardinals, who are next down.
And the Cardinals didn't have a good game Tuesday night either.
Right. It seems like there's a surging Miami team, and then when you look at the last 10 of the people that are in the race, no one is above 500. Well, with the exception of Milwaukee, excuse me. But last 10, Colorado's gone 3-7. Right. So it's not just the Diamondbacks who are working through this. There are two spots for that wild card. You obviously want the top one so you can have the home game, because you don't want to go to Coors Field. You don't want to go to Miller Park. you don't want to go to St. Louis, especially with this Diamondbacks team, who is very good at home. But I just wanted to credit you with making a very good point of it's not just the Diamondbacks that are going through these struggles. They have a huge addition in getting Robbie Ray back. The schedule will lighten up a little bit, and you're facing a more vulnerable Dodgers team than you've ever seen.
And that's a key right there, is a more vulnerable Dodgers team.
Yes, still even without even without those two, probably a top. You could still make the argument they're still the best team.
I
in
mean,
baseball,
they're 20 games up in National League West. That's the biggest margin in all of baseball.
Right.
So. We're going to do an minor leaguer of the week, but it's not really a minor leaguer of the week. It's more of a we want to bring notice to this and re-mention this guy up in Hillsboro, Oregon, Dalton Varsho, who was the conditional first round pick in the 2017 draft. We've mentioned him a few times before. They were up where the path of totality hit from the eclipse on Monday, and they stopped the entire game to kind of take it in and see it. Obviously, it darkened the skies a bit for 2-3 minutes, and then it lightened back up, so they did stop the game. Dalton Varsho had a home run before the game was stopped and then got those good eclipse vibes, as I've been speaking of this week, and had one after the eclipse, or the game resumed after the eclipse as well.
I'm glad that someone had good eclipse vibes, because Haley and I were talking off air, and neither one of us really had great days that day.
Or 2 days after that.
Yeah, some tires were punctured and things like that. But, yeah, and again, this goes back to a very strong draft class mm-hmm. that the Diamondbacks had. Pavin Smith is already the top prospect in the system.
Right.
Varsho is killing it. Ellis is killing it. These are guys that, again, they wanted to get those college-tested guys because they wanted to hit the ground running and get them up into the higher levels of minor league baseball. They've done that, and Varsho is just another example of them delivering.
And you know what I think is interesting, too? When I was on that conference call after the draft, one of the things they said was that, yeah, Varsho is – we drafted him for his bat. Defensively, he may be, like – a spot guy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely killed it up there in Hillsboro, both offensively, and he's been playing pretty good defenses from what I've seen as well. So very big addition to the Diamondbacks farm system with that. Like we said, we are in the midst of the series with the Mets, two more games from on Wednesday evening and Thursday evening, and then the Diamondbacks return home for a series with the Giants and a series with the Dodgers. For Jordan Hamm, I'm Haley Stasiak. Thanks for listening to Diamonds in the Desert.